Safety, dependability, and power. Chevy Silverado isn't happy unless the work is hard and the day is long. No wonder Silverado is America's number one best-selling retail pickup truck. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
Hey, Bob Kessler. This is John Williams. How are you, Bob? You
I'm
sound good.
Well.
Everything good in your world?
Yes, things are good. Yeah, over the cough thing. That was
around
you were
a little under the weather there. Yeah, so enjoy your new health.
Thank you.
And save your money, because here's what's going to happen. Experience as a teacher. I have all of the permanent bags in my house, in my car, in our trunk. My wife, Brenda's very conscientious about, just for green reasons, not using grocery store bags. We have our own cloth bags. I never remember to bring them into the store. I never remember to bring them in the store. Half the time I walk in the door and she goes, you know, we got a bunch of cloth bags in the car, in the pantry. You trip on them on your way to the store virtually. Why don't you use the cloth? Because I can't remember to bring them. And 7 cents, I don't know if that's going to be a motivator or not for folks, but I don't mind that idea. So, John, thanks for the conversation there. Hanson, that is, in the past half hour. And this is John Williams. I'm here until 3 o'clock this afternoon here on WGN Radio. We will, in this hour, as we always do, our Mincing Rascals podcast. We'll talk a little bit about Rahm Emanuel's comment that got the president mad enough. He fired off an angry tweet about bringing in the federal troops to Chicago, or the feds. Not exactly sure what that means. It's been a long time since we spoke. I mean, you scratch your head and think about it, the Oscar nominees have come out since we were on this show. And I was thinking about that. When people do the Oscar nominations, they'll usually say, okay, best picture, here's what would win, here's what should win, leading actress, here's who should win, here's who I want to win, et cetera. I want to do it a little bit differently. I was looking at the top 10 movies. Arrival, Fences, Hacksaw Ridge, Hell or High Water, Hidden Figures, La La Land, Lion, Manchester by the Sea, and Moonlight. I've seen all but Hacksaw Ridge on that list, but one person who sees a lot more movies than I do is our producer, Griffin Filipich. I tasked Griffin with giving us just what were some of his favorite scenes, performances, movies. Just kind of plow us through in this half hour, Griffin, some memorable moments. And if you're taking notes at home, maybe you'll find a gem or two here that you hadn't thought about. So, Griff, where do you want to start? What's something that really made you happy or surprised you this year?
Well, if it's all about what made me happy, it probably came early in the year. What made me happiest in a movie was the Channing Tatum tap dancing scene from Hail Caesar, a movie we talked about on this show. I remember you were skeptical about my endorsement of it.
Yeah.
And I called it a minor work, which you we're not thrilled with, or something. But there, and it's not great. You were kind of right. It's an uneven movie, but there are real high highs in individual scenes, and this was one. You got Channing Tatum tap dancing and singing a song called "No Dames," in a sailor costume.
What is Hail Caesar even about?
It's about old Hollywood. Josh Brolin is like a Hollywood executive.
Oh, yeah. I remember. I thought the trailers on this looked pretty good.
Well, this is how it's set up, to take you into individual scenes of fake movies in the movie. So he's trying to fix all these movies that they're trying to produce.
I see.
He's going from one set to the next, so you get individual scenes like this, and this
cool.
is one of the best ones. There's another great one with Ralph Fiennes that I think a lot of people are also talking about as one of the scenes of the
year.
Well,
that sounds like a great premise for a movie anyway.
Oh, and I enjoyed it, but it's tonally uneven. You just never know exactly how to feel, and it's very anticlimactic. So those were problems that I had with it. But their individual scenes are worth seeing the movie for, and this is one of them for sure.
Channing Tatum dancing for
5 minutes for
time.
A long time.
Well, that's,
I could have used more. It's like
really
well, and that's why people loved La La Land, is that it's just silliness and like original Hollywood musical that you just never get. And this was just condensed all that joy into even smaller portion of time, like 5 minutes. So,
did you see the Saturday Night Live bit last week where they had the two cops shaking down somebody who didn't appreciate La La Land?
Yeah.
Very funny, because that's what happens. There's this
that
sort of
funny.
Cadre of people who are super defensive about La La Land, and if you say something like, well, the singing wasn't great, then they explode on you and say, that was the point, it wasn't supposed to be great.
Well, that's what the Oscars do, is they make you root against movies you had a great time at or over-defend certain movies.
Totally.
They totally change your perspective on things that I kind of wish they didn't exist because, you know, it just changes the conversation from what it should be, which is just, what did you like? You know, what was fun?
Well, I like that you are able to find diamonds in the rough or scenes in a movie that you say was uneven. So from Hail Caesar, you liked No Dames, Channing Tatum singing that song and doing a dance. Give me another scene that you liked this
year. Well, and then this is like the other end of the spectrum, a scene from a movie that's probably my favorite of the year and is nominated for Best Picture, Moonlight. The diner scene near the end of that movie. I don't know how much to give away. I don't know if everybody's seen this. I know they're going to get more chances now that it's nominated for the number of awards that it is. But, you know, Chiron is the main character. You've seen him at different stages of his life, and you've seen him go through horrible, horrible things. And it's never overly melodramatic. I don't think it's not gratuitous, but you've seen him go through a lot. And at the end, you get a little moment of grace for him, someone who literally sits him down and feeds him in this diner. And it feels really good to see that happen. And I don't know what... how much more to say, because there's certain spoilery stuff, but that was deeply emotional, I thought. And
truly.
Really profound, yeah. I couldn't,
that's a nice observation, because I won't give anything away either, Griffin, but if you know anything about the movie, you know it's about a man who's sort of conflicted with his sexual orientation, and he comes to a little peace at the end of the movie and with somebody who's very important to him.
But,
and there's something about serving a meal to somebody that's very personal and interesting.
But when you talk about it this way, there's an automatic oversimplification that happens, because you just can't really, you know, whittle down what all that's happening. It's very complicated. So I just recommend that people see it, as with everything. That's my favorite movie of the year. And the two men in that scene and the series of scenes near the end are Andre Holland and Trevante Rhodes, and they give together my favorite performances of two of my favorite performances of the year. Anyway, they're not the ones nominated for Moonlight, which is Naomi Harris and Mahershala Ali, but that whole movie is a million great performances, and it's kind of hard to know. Before the nominations came out, I was very confused and wondering how that they would choose to award it, or, you know.
Nominated,
exactly, because, you know, just small snippets of performances here and there. So
right. And I think that's an interesting thing about this movie, too. Moonlight was probably my favorite movie of the year, in that here's this person's life told in three chapters, three sets of actors, and you could see where one of them wouldn't be as good as the other. These are completely different individuals, and yet one is just as good as the other. It's a terrific movie, and I'll second that scene now that you mention it.
Yeah.
You really liked Hell or High Water.
Loved it.
I like the movie. What's the scene that jumped out at you?
I think it's the second bank robbery. The movie is about Chris Pine and Ben Foster. They play brothers, and they are robbing banks for a reason that we learn later in the movie. But in the second one, they are kind of forced into a corner. They have to rob a bank around noon, which they don't like. They usually like to do it early in the morning because there's no one there. But they need the money, and they have to go when it's really crowded, and they go, and everyone in the bank is concealed carrying. And they quickly find themselves in a bind with a bunch of guns pointed all over the room.
It's kind of hilarious. It's almost Coen
Brothers-ish. There's a moment of absurd humor that is then followed by the opposite, by some real tragedy, but I won't give, you know, a ton away. But that was just an amazing scene. That was one of my favorites of the year.
Hell or High Water is a great movie. I don't know if many people have seen it. It really is surprising in a lot of ways. And for those of you who are interested in that argument, and this isn't a reason to see the movie, but here's a little moment for you. Concealed carry. If everybody had a gun at the school, at the mall, at the church, at the bank, then when somebody tries to pull out a gun, we'll have them surrounded. And that's exactly how this scene goes.
Yeah, and it doesn't take a conspicuous stand that would put anybody off
right.
and throw you out of the movie. I think it really does unfold naturally and doesn't, it's not showy in its politics, because I don't think the movie has a strict set of politics. It's telling a story. And Michael Phillips pointed out from the Chicago Tribune, this movie made his top 10 of the year. And he said that it attracted, when absolutely nothing else could, this movie attracted viewers from both sides in a way that you would not have expected from a 2016 release. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm very apolitical about that movie. The Invitation, there's a scene in this movie you like?
Oh, man, I love this movie called
The Invitation. I don't even know this movie, do I?
Probably not. It came out, it's directed by Karen Kusama. It's a indie horror movie from early, I think it came out in February. it's just an indie horror movie about some people at a dinner party in Los Angeles that end up trapped in the house and wondering who trapped them there. And they meet some new people that they're not so sure about, and things do go badly. But I won't get too much more into the plot except to say a lot of people had problems with certain things in this movie that I didn't. So not everyone loved it as much as I did. But I think everyone can agree on the final shot is terrifying and beautiful. And it's worth watching that movie for. I don't want to give it away, but was one of my favorite moments in the theater was the final shot of The Invitation.
Isn't that such a sort of cliched thing? In the final scene, that'll be the gotcha moment. And that bar, if you go there, is set so high.
Yeah, and when movies attempt it, they so rarely.
That's my point.
Yeah. So
this one achieves that, huh?
Yeah, and it's such a joy to see somebody just go for it completely and nail it. And it was terrifying and really smart and just memorable for sure.
Here's a movie, The Edge of 17. I forgot. I saw that movie. I saw it on Thanksgiving. You and I saw that movie.
Yes.
What's the scene that jumps out in The Edge of 17?
The Edge of 17 was a big surprise. It's a teen comedy drama from a first-time director, Kelly Freeman Craig. And it stars Hailee Steinfeld, who's a pop star. But has also been in movies like True Grit and a couple other things.
She's really good in this movie.
And she's amazing in this movie. And she's best when she's paired with Woody Harrelson, who's playing her history teacher. And there's a scene that opens the movie where she tells him that she's going to kill herself. And then they sort of stop it right there and then rewind to basically the beginning of her life. And then tell it. And then you come back to that scene halfway through the movie and to watch his response is not at all what you expect, and it's exactly what she needs in that moment in a way that you couldn't possibly know until later in the movie. But it's really, really funny, actually, is the thing about all their interactions. And they have another one, too, that I love, but this is sort of standing in for that one because I couldn't possibly...
It's a dangerous read for him because, again, it opens the movie, and we don't know maybe what he knows. And when she says, I'm going to kill her myself, you know the teenagers can be very dramatic, but they also can kill themselves. So you got to play this just right, Woody, and he does. And it's I'm glad they revisit that scene. And you're right. How could that be funny? But oh my God, it works and it's funny.
It's hysterical. Yeah.
That's The Edge of 17. What is that for those who haven't seen that movie, Griff? What is it reminiscent of?
Oh well, it's executive produced by James L. Brooks, who has made a lot of great movies and TV shows, and has a sense of like this emotional humor. But I think it's most reminiscent of John Hughes, the classic Pretty in Pink or The Breakfast Club, things like that. But you haven't had a good teen movie like that in so long. They don't make them anymore. So to see this in a theater last year was such a treat. I think it's the best teen movie since Juno. Not that it has that much in common with Juno, but of that caliber, you haven't gotten a movie like this in a really long time.
It's 120. This is WGN. I'm John Williams. Griffin Filipich produces this show. He sees more movies than most people. We asked him to tell us what were some of his favorite scenes, performances, movies of the year, rather than go category by category. We'll pause here and come back. So this is kind of favorite scenes, Griff. Maybe you've got more in this, but I also want to know favorite performances. Give me some moments from actors or actresses per se that were singular. We'll pick it up here in a minute on WGN. WGN 126 now, WGN Radio. John Williams here. We're going back and talking about the Oscars this way. The nominees came out, and we haven't been on since. Seems like a long time ago. But it also made me think, okay, what were some of those movies that either you missed or you watched? But it's worth just going back and reminding people what some of the great scenes or performances were of 2016. Our producer, Griffin Filipich, is looking at them for us. So where next, Griff? What do you like?
Well, that music was the Rolling Stones. That's a song called Emotional Rescue. That song plays in a scene in a movie called A Bigger Splash that is worth looking into. And it's one of my favorite scenes of the year also, just because it features the actor Ralph Fiennes dancing like a maniac to that song. For some reason, dancing did it for me big
time
this year.
How about it? No kidding.
But
it's three dancing.
He is electric in this scene and in this entire movie. and it's so funny to watch him. His character in the movie produced that song. He once dated Tilda Swinton, who is playing a David Bowie-like rock star on vacation, and he kind of crashes her vacation and then puts that song on at one point just to talk about how he produced it and then dances like an absolute maniac. Worth watching that movie for that one scene. We don't have a ton of time left.
No, we don't. So let's jump over to – let's go to some of your favorite performances.
Yeah, I'll just run them down pretty quick. Andre Holland and Trevante Rhodes we talked about in Moonlight. They were sort of in some of my favorite scenes of the year. Annette Bening, who was notably snubbed for Best Actress in 20th Century Women. I absolutely loved her in that movie. Ryan Gosling's nominated for La La Land, but I thought he was good, not great in that movie. I would have nominated him for The Nice Guys, which was the – buddy cop caper 70s set from earlier in the year with Russell Crowe. He gives the funniest performance of the year.
Is that another one of those uneven movies where you had scenes you really liked?
Well, yeah. It's like it's also set up as a mystery, and I think on those terms it doesn't work at all. Like for mystery stories to work, they kind of have to work like clockwork, and that one has some big plot holes. But it really doesn't matter because it's so funny. If you just watch it as a comedy, I have absolutely no problem with The Nice
Ryan
Guys.
Ryan Gosling and Nice Guys. What else?
There's a movie called The Fitz, which features a performance from a young girl named Royalty Hightower, and that one is worth seeking out. It didn't get a huge release, but it's a first-time performance from an amateur actor, and she's amazing in that movie. Also, Kate McKinnon in Ghostbusters, the Ghostbusters remake. It was another movie that I was sort of mixed on. I did like it, but I wasn't crazy about it, but she that was like a star-making performance for Kate McKinnon.
The Lion is a 2016 film, right? Sure.
Yeah.
That little boy, Sonny, I don't know
fantastic,
if there's a
yeah.
scene per se, but I think we should just take a moment to say, if you go see The Lion, and you still can, find the movie The Lion. It's the Dev Patel, Nicole Kidman flick. There's a little boy who plays the character that Dev Patel is, but obviously much younger in his life. And that kid is the star of the movie. And I have not been so enchanted with a juvenile performance as I was that one in a very long time. Are you with me on that?
Yeah, he was fantastic, yeah.
Give me something else before I let you go.
Well, on the topic of kid performances, there's a movie that's filled with them. It's called Queen of Katwe. It was a Disney live-action movie from earlier in the year as well. And there's a lot of great kid performances, but you've also got David Oyelowo and Lupita Nyong'o. And David Oyelowo, who played Martin Luther King in Selma from a couple of years ago, it's so fun to watch great, great professional actors like them sort of shepherd young kid actors through scenes that they've never been in before. It's great energy in that kind of contrast. So I loved him in that movie. That one is also really worth seeking out.
Okay. I'll put on my Facebook page your top five movies of the year because I think you have a list that's worth noting. It's obvious in some instances and not in others, and we'll put that on our Facebook page. I'm King John on Facebook. Like me there. It's 129. Thank you, Griffin. Let's get into the newsroom. That's coming up next on WGN. Thank you, Bob. So we did our movie review segment.
Yeah.
I took Griffin's notes and posted them on my Facebook page. So if there is a scene, a movie, or a performance that you are trying to remember, well, there's your cheat sheet. It's on my Facebook page. Like me there, I'm King John on Facebook. Debbie Dameron wrote, "Hey, I agreed with your assessment of Little Sonny, who played the lead in Lion. He outshines Dev Patel's performance. Did you read the book, A Long Way Home? So much better than the movie. ! Movie didn't give adoptive mom enough credit for how he finds his Indian family. ! Are you reading anything now worth sharing? ! I've read many of your suggestions, particularly The Secret Game, all capital letters, which I thoroughly love. ! Not sad, says Debbie. Thanks, Debbie. Yep, there's some good notes there, and you'll see Griffey's on our Facebook page if you want to do a little more movie going. Okay, let's go to the Mincing Rascals. This is our weekly podcast where we broadcast part of it. It's a roundtable with Steve Bertrand from GN Radio and from the Chicago Tribune editorial cartoonist Scott Stantis and columnist Eric Zorn. We started out talking about Donald Trump, who was watching, I guess, the O'Reilly Factor one night and saw Rahm Emanuel say something that Trump didn't like, which caused the new president to then fire off one of his famous tweets where he said that maybe we need to call out the feds because Chicago is such a dangerous city. We pick it up there.
This guy watches a lot of...
Do we know what calling out the feds means? Do we know what he would do if he did something to help Chicago?
Well, the obvious thing is to call in the National Guard. I mean, that's generally what you mean when you call in the feds, right?
Is that a state thing or a fed thing, though? We were arguing
that. The governor has to call them out, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, that was the way I took it.
We all did, I think. But I think Emmanuel took it and, you know, twisted it in his favor. He said, sure, bring in the help. Let's go. You want more ATF, more... DEA people coming in to help, we'd welcome that help.
Well, there was a really, really fine op-ed piece in this morning's Tribune.
Did you write it?
I didn't write it. You know, I do write most of the fine ones, but this is from George W. Knox. He's the director of the National Gang Crime Research Center, and he says, yeah, send the feds into Chicago, sure, and then he lists all this federal aid that should go to Chicago for job training, for after-school programs, for education, for rebuilding neighborhoods and so on. It's like, yeah, we could use federal aid, and I think the mayor said something similar to that. It was like, if you're talking about sending federal dollars here to help us fight crime, absolutely, but that's not what Trump talks about when he talks about fighting crime. If anyone saw that interview on ABC where he basically says, you know, it's easy. This is a simple problem. You just got to get tough. That's basically his idea on fighting crime.
Maybe officers on the streets, that might help. Maybe we could dispatch officers to other areas because the National Guard helped. I mean, I want to not dismiss it out of hand.
Well, but let's look at the other side of this equation. We're still looking at now it's January in Chicago and the shootings haven't slowed down. In fact, they're at a faster rate than it started in January of 2016. It may be because there's better weather. But, I mean, there is a problem here and it's systemic. It is part the police force standing down. It is part of stopping stop and frisk. It is part of a judiciary that won't send people to jail under the existing laws.
But no, I mean, I don't want to discount this, and I feel like it's kind of easy for those of us who live in safe neighborhoods and work in a safe building to say, you know, oh, don't soil our streets with army men with guns. I think you need to go, you know, if you ask people who live in those communities, who live on those streets, who can't send their children outside when their kids are on the porch, they're afraid they're going to get shot, might have a very different view of that and are really looking for whatever they can possibly do to make those neighborhoods safer. And they can't wait around for years for jobs programs and after school programs to mm-hmm. clean it up. So, I mean, I think that you'd have to be careful when you talk about something like this not to sound too obtuse.
Well, my thing is, and I keep going back to it, I don't think the president's words matter that much to him. And, you know, you can go back to that ABC interview where he said again that he's convinced and had been told that waterboarding or torture works. You know, during the campaign, he said that General Mattis told him it didn't work and he was convinced it didn't. So he said something different there than he did yesterday. I don't think he puts weight into his words. So I think it's easy for him to say, I'm going to send the feds in. The rest of us try to figure out what that means. And he doesn't really... That's not a priority for him to figure out what it means.
It's not the first time he said it. It's not the first time he said it that way. So that's another thing to bear in mind. But he does, you're right. He never qualifies what the feds mean.
Well, if I could quote him exactly on the interview last night, he said, the problem of violence in Chicago is very easily fixable. We need to smarten up and toughen up. Now, it's not very specific, but it's also kind of ominous in a way, because I think when you're talking about toughening up, you're talking about getting rid of some of the, you know, civil liberties, the norms that violate the control police work. The optics of it would be horrible for the mayor, maybe for the governor as well. It's like to have, you know, armed and also, you know, National Guard troops are not trained to be policemen.
Would it work? I mean... Why do you think that would slow down someone shooting someone in an apartment
on
a corner?
It would have to be attached to a number of things. You'd have to have the army, military presence on every corner, and there would have to be a curfew.
It would work. It would work where the troops were. You could put a bunch of them.
Sure.
And then it would move to the next street.
Well, that's my point. I think maybe I alluded to earlier, and I think we should discuss the fact that the president of Mexico canceled his trip to the United States for next week. Earlier, Donald Trump said, well, if he doesn't want to pay for the wall, maybe he shouldn't come. And Peña Nieto then issued a tweet saying, we told the White House that we're not going to come.
Do we want, I mean, honestly, do we want a trade war with Mexico? Do we want to have this important ally in our hemisphere turn against us? I mean, because they could ally themselves with Russia, with China. I mean, this is not, it's not as easy as just saying you're going to pay for this wall that we don't need because we have to satisfy these people who think that we need a wall when we don't.
Don't you think, Eric, you forget who the big dog in this conversation is. The United States doesn't have to care if the president of Mexico doesn't want to pay a visit to Washington. And we don't have to care if they don't like our trade policies. We're the United States. We get to dictate our own terms. We don't have to buckle to the unfairness of or the wishes of the Mexican government.
I'm looking at it.
If we feel like we're getting screwed here, we have an obligation to fix it.
But we're not. But the thing is, I don't think we are getting screwed here. That's the bottom line. Is I think that this will be a bad deal for the U.S. if we end up. If we end up building this, spending billions of dollars to build this wall, and end up in some sort of a trade war where goods coming from Mexico are much more expensive than they are now, and where we're not getting the kind of cooperation that we expect in our hemisphere from this important country. I think that this is, if you're looking at it from what is in America's best interest, I don't think this is in America's best interest.
What's the worst of it, Eric? That Chevys are more expensive or Fords are more expensive? Is that the worst of it?
Things could, with all these trade things that he's talking about, yeah, a lot of things could get a lot more expensive.
I think this is a decision that people are either intelligently or foolishly making. They say, okay, you know what? All those inexpensive goods from China and Mexico at Walmart or on the car dealer lots, I'd rather pay more for them and feel that I was treated fairly and that those were made in America than pay less for them because of the trade situation.
When do consumers make that kind of choice? You can buy American-made stuff now and it's much more expensive. You want to buy American-made shoes, they cost more. You buy American-made clothes, I think, somewhere, they cost more. And you could not shop at Walmart and shop at your downtown stores, and it costs more. But people don't do that. They go and they shop at Walmart, they shop at Amazon, they look for the lowest price, and they're going to be angry if the prices go way up and the jobs don't come back to fill those.
Well, I think even more to a humanitarian point, my wife had a great line this morning because she was talking about the trade war stuff, and she said, well, there go the dollar stores. That's where poor people shop. And that's where they get, stuff that's inexpensive. Trump is talking about getting rid of that.
The equation is false, right? I mean, if the barriers go up, more of us aren't going to be working. Those of us, the manufacturing people, have lost their jobs to automation. Certainly some to Mexico and China, but
yeah,
mostly to automation.
Right.
So what's going to happen is we're going to pay more, and they're not going to be necessarily working anymore.
What's your attitude about the search for the illegal aliens or illegal voters and the huge investigation we're going to have into this?
Another waste of money.
Well, and I'm gobsmacked. I mean, he's talking about people who are registered to vote in two states. And that includes his Treasury Secretary nominee and his top advisor, Steve
illegal.
Bannon.
I'm registered.
No, of course not. I was going
to
ask you if you were. You probably are. A lot of people are.
You just don't.
You don't vote in two states.
Who rescinds their voter right registration when they move? They just out-register somewhere else.
I just don't do it.
I'm sure all my kids, or at least two of my kids, are registered.
And that's the Pew study that the president keeps referring to. It was a study looking at how the voter rolls needed to be cleaned up by the bureaucrats who do that. That people move. People die, and sometimes there are as many as a few million who are sort of out of date. It doesn't mean those few million are voting twice or illegals.
Despite all the jokes about dead people voting in Chicago, you just don't find that. You don't find any prosecutions or instances of that happening in any number whatsoever. People die, and they don't. They're still on the rolls because canvassers don't catch them for a while.
But also, to be devil's advocate here, I mean, I would welcome this investigation only because it's always been for a number of years.
But no one believes it's true.
Wouldn't it be nice if we had facts that actually said?
I think we do. We've got 50 secretaries of state, the people whose job it is to clean up and keep track of the voter fraud and voter rolls, and they say it doesn't exist.
Scott, why do you care? What's your worry?
Well, you don't want voter fraud, clearly. You want clean and legitimate elections. And this, if you had this investigation, it just showed what we all believe it will show. And then that puts it to rest.
What do you think the president's motivation is behind this, Mr. Stanis?
Oh, well, he wants to just, you want to hear my crazy ass theory is that I think he wants to get rid of elections. But that, I think that's I'm not kidding. I am not kidding.
But, Scott, we don't want Martians either, but we don't need an investigation to know that they don't exist. That's kind of the thing. And for me, it's the most telling is that you've got the president's spokesman saying not even that there's might be something to it, only saying, well, it's a long-held belief by the president.
That was very funny, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's basically saying, all know it's outrageous, but hey, the guy thinks it's true.
Yes, the president believes this.
He believes
this for a long time. It's like, he believes it, but do you believe it? Well, I'm not in a position to say.
Give me one last answer to this question, Steve. The New York Times in a headline used the word lie.
Yeah.
if the administration puts forward something that's not true, is it appropriate to call those lies?
I don't like, I'm uncomfortable with that. I'd rather,
why?
Well, I have a baby answer. I mean, I'd rather use a different word that means the same thing, which is sort of cowardice.
Prevarication.
Yeah, or, you know, unproven or unfounded, you know, the unfounded claims. I don't know. A lie implies intent. And, you know, this guy just might have a goofy conspiracy belief. That doesn't mean he's intentionally lying. I just don't like the word.
I saw a rumination, a printed rumination on this, and they talked about Trump's assertion that he saw a bunch of Muslims celebrating on rooftops after 9/11. And they were saying, well, that is clearly a lie. And I was thinking, well, that might not be a lie because he might actually believe that, because I don't think his grasp of reality is as strong as we would hope
it would
be.
It's alternative truth. It's different.
And so I guess I don't want to edge away from the word lie, because something that is said with utter disregard for whether it's true or not, to me, qualifies as a lie.
Let's wrap this thing up, boys, by sharing with our listeners something that we are reading, watching, listening to, or consuming. What's the recommendation this week?
I want to offer a countercheck to a previous recommendation.
Okay.
You know what it might be? John's pick from last week, The Young Pope.
Oh.
We were texting about it last night, I think, and The Young Pope, I've watched the first four or five episodes. John, are you still recommending it?
No.
Yeah.
No, you're right. The first one was so awesome.
It was incredible.
The second one sort of made, did you have the same sort of feeling about it I did, Steve?
Yeah, I did. I love some of the characters of it, and it was intriguing, but by episode, I think we're at four or five now, it's like, I'll get on with it.
Yeah. How about you, Eric Zorn? What's your recommendation this week?
I am recommending the Axios newsletter. Axios is a brand new web publication based in Washington. Jim Vandehei, Mike Allen from Politico started it. And they have a daily briefing. It's like a 10-point insider look at Washington. Very easy to read. The motto of one of the mission statements for the Axios website is they're looking for smart brevity, which I think is something that we can all use in our news coverage. It's axios.com, and you can subscribe to their free newsletter. And it's one of the first things I read every morning after the Chicago Tribune and Stannis' cartoons.
Of course.
How about you, Scott? What do you like?
I've got
week?
Three quick things. First off, Hidden Figures, the film about three African-American women, mathematicians. It makes heroes of mathematicians, which I think is marvelous, and every kid should go see it. And the second thing is there's a great webpage I just stumbled on just before I came up here called, have you seen this, According to Trump? Because, he, you know, when he gives a speech, he flails with his hands. And so they've actually inserted
an accordion. Accordion Trump is what you're saying.
Is that it?
I think it's accordion, right?
Is it accordion or accordion to? I thought it was. Anyway, they put an accordion in his hands, and it's actually very funny.
I have something that others don't have. I don't like the way that looks, but I would be able to do that if I wanted to. I'd be the only one that would be able to do that if we wanted to. I just don't want to because I think that would be a conflict. We're doing them a tremendous service by doing it. We are going to build a wall.
Life according to Trump or accordion to Trump. Links are at the end of the podcast. When you look at it at WGNradio.com or WGNplus.com, you can listen to the Mincing Rascals wherever you subscribe to your finer podcast. Thank you, Scott Stantis, Eric Zorn, Steve Bertrand. Next time I'll try not to be on a phone. Mark Baser is a friend of ours. Very funny. He does a terrific stand-up interview show and a really good TV show, and I'm going to be in the next episode. Okay, the details coming up here on WGN. Here's Mark Baser from Channel 11's The Interview Show. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Really good. Well, I was on The Interview Show on stage with you just before the election last November. That's your live performance show at the Hideout. You interviewed me and some other people, and you taped that, obviously. And now it's broadcast as The Interview Show on WTTW. How's it going?
It's going great. This is our second season of eight episodes, and we're about midway through it. And you're right. So now we used to have a different calculus. It used to be, let's film the show. Have the show at this club called The Hideout. Let's do it as a live show. Let's have it live and breathe there and kind of ends there, or we put some videos up online. But now we're filming it very specifically for TV and for WTTW Channel 11, and they've been great. But usually we're talking about things like food and music and things that last, well, at least have some shelf life. They're evergreen, as they say. And we had you and we had a few other people on my most, like, I couldn't have picked a worse time to have guests who are talking about the news and current events and people who deal with current events like you do.
I gave you an out. I told you.
Because it was 4 days before the election.
I told you. I said, Mark, you can cancel me. This, you don't, because we were speaking for a live audience just before the election, knowing it's going to be broadcast after. And I know what I said. And the room and I very much had the vibe that Hillary would win. How in the world were you able to edit that and make it make any sense for Friday night?
Every time you said Hillary, we had somebody come in with a voice and just go, Trump.
Of course you did. Well, the problem solved.
You know what? It was interesting. I'll tell you where I made a mistake, just so everybody knows. What we should have done is we should have aired your episode 2 weeks ago, because I did not fully – the interview works great. It works fine. Most of what we're talking about, in fact, all of really what we're talking about, and I really like the conversation, is about how crazy a year last year was, or the election season was, to be a radio host. And it works, and that's still very, very relevant. And you did somehow you pulled it off, in which I don't think people, other than people listening to this show right now, will realize that it was taped a while ago, except for the fact that I didn't know that the first – 2 weeks, or first, it will be 2 weeks by then, of the new presidency would be as, pick your word, but as much stuff would have already have happened, I guess is what.
Extra.
But I just, you know, I thought there's, you know, when I take a job, I spend the first 6 months like learning where the bathroom is and stuff like that.
So, oh, man. Well, okay. You know, if I make a shred of sense Friday night at 7:30 on Channel 11, then you should get an Emmy for editing, okay? Because I don't think I was that good on stage, and I know there's a time problem now, so I want to see how you piece this together. But your work is always terrific. Okay, so Channel 11. Hey, Mark, and then is it on, like, the next Friday night, the next Friday night, the next Friday night?
Yes. So we'll have it for another – it'll be running for first-run episodes for the next 3 weeks. So it's actually also on – there's another episode that aired, obviously, this past Friday that will air tomorrow night again, because they re-air things on TTW a few times. So that's on tomorrow, I think, at 10:30. And that was a good episode too. So, we've got four more episodes left in the season. So it's been good.
I got to go, but did I look good? I mean, forget what I said. How is my hair?
You look great. I would advise that everybody turns down the volume and just watches us wave our hands around and gesticulate.
It's the interview show, Channel 11, Friday night, 7:30 this week. Okay, Mark, I'll catch you another day. Good luck. Congratulations.
I
know the show's
a
hit.
It's good. It's good. You won't feel weird.
Any weirder than I normally do. The news is next on WGN. Thank you, Bob. I follow the Big Ten and the Big East in basketball. DePaul's losing to Creighton. 32-14.
Yes.
You just mentioned that.
Yeah, I had it at tied. I didn't hit the little
reset button
the
there.
Reset button. Like, what's the latest score button? Yeah.
Now it's 32-14.
Okay. Yeah.
Creighton's really good. DePaul is not really bad. DePaul is close. They've given some good teams a run. They almost beat my Butler Bulldogs. So I'm all over the Big East, and I'd love to see DePaul, although that's such a tough conference, to sort of inch its way back up. And it's going to be hard to do with teams like Xavier and Villanova, et cetera, playing against them all the time. And this is a tall order, Creighton. But go Blue Demons and go Northwestern Wildcats. It's about 9 after 2 here on WGN. I'm John Williams. Nice to be with you on a Saturday. You can hear me Saturdays from 1 to 3. And remember now, the Mincing Rascals podcast is wherever you subscribe to your finer podcasts. It's free. That's the Mincing Rascals. You can download it there, and you can also listen to it regularly online at WGN.com, WGNradio.com, and WGNplus.com. Let's talk a little TV. We haven't done this in a while. Joining us again is Kelly Freeze from Channel Guide Magazine and TVInsider.com. Kelly, it's John Williams. How have you been?
I'm great, John. It's great to speak with you today.
The problem with you is you're probably like a doctor at a cocktail party where people immediately start telling them about their bad knee. With you, when people find out what you do, they either immediately start to give you a review of a show you didn't ask for, or they're peppering you with, okay, give me something good to watch, right?
You know, that's exactly what happens. People always say, what's new? What's great? What have you know, what are you binging? And thankfully, I watch enough TV that I usually have an answer. So I love it.
You know, an interesting genre, it's not the right word, but I just will say this. I think some of the most compelling television I've watched lately are the Sean Spicer daily press briefings for the White House now. He's, you know, Donald Trump's guy. And that has been almost appointment TV for political junkies. And I'm not one, but some of those things have just been so fascinating and intriguing to watch. I thought the reality shows that you watch would be hard-pressed to come up with tension as real as this, you know?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. Anything involving politics is given birth to the genre of, you know, political, almost like satire on a lot of cable shows. People like Samantha Bee and John Oliver and Trevor Noah. They're really some clever, brilliant people who can take what's going on in the real world, dumb it down for people like me, and then, you know, but make you think. They really call attention to a lot of really interesting stuff that I don't think that most people would normally be interested in.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And obviously they have an angle and they're liberal and the administration is not. So I don't think it's for everybody. But I'll tell you this. I had a conversation with some people last night. We were out listening to some music and having some beers. And somehow we started to talk about the cold opens for Saturday Night Live. This isn't why I called you, but let's finish this thought anyway. And I said, I think that that show, you know, has sort of two obligations. One is to be funny and entertaining, but people also look to it right now to validate some of their political views. They want them to expose the president as the emperor that has no clothes. Some people won't like that. They can turn the TV off. But a lot of people are looking at Saturday Night Live as sort of a validation of some of their anxiety and beliefs that they have. And I think that's a real tight rope for them to walk.
I think one of the things that Saturday Night Live has always done so well, it's geared towards young people who this may be their first baby step into anything politically. So it's a great place for people to get some information and get some entertainment and then dig further, you know, go read a newspaper, go listen to radio that's, you know, going to give you some in-depth stories. So I think it's something SNL's always done.
And while I thought last week's cold open wasn't its best in a while, they didn't have Alec Baldwin doing his Donald Trump, but they did have the Vladimir Putin character. I think they have been pretty funny and pretty smart in that they're making a point. And that's, I think, the two masters that they need to serve. Okay, enough about that. What's hot? Let's go back to that cocktail party. What are you suggesting or recommending these days?
Well, right now, you know, this is the golden age of television. And you know, I'm sure people might argue with me, but there's so much good stuff on. And what's interesting about the way we're watching TV now, it's no longer appointment TV. People don't sit down on Thursdays. And people may sit down on Thursdays and watch their favorite show, but you can watch your favorite show at any time. And if you hear about a show, and it's the third episode or the third episode of the third season, you can catch up fairly quickly by binging or streaming or on demand. So any show doesn't have to be week one for you to get on board.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a show that I think a lot of people talked about maybe a week or two ago was The Young Pope, starring Jude Law. And for people who don't know about this show, it's the imagining of the first American pope. And Jude Law, Mr. Movie Star Jude Law, plays the pope. And playing his best friend slash advisor slash woman who, a nun who raised him, is Diane Keaton.
Yeah.
Did you ever think you'd have Jude Law and Diane Keaton starring in a TV series?
Yeah, that's pretty funny. And I had a conversation with Steve Bertrand, our news guy here, about that earlier this week. We both loved the first episode, just were intrigued and enchanted by it. Less so the second one, less so the third one. What's your feeling about how that story is playing out, The Young Pope?
Well, it's visually beautiful. I mean,
it is. I'll give you that.
Sorrentino is a gorgeous, he's a wonderful director with an eye towards cinematography. It's such a weird story, though. I don't think it's supposed to be anything other than weird and beautiful and a little almost campy, kind of. Can I say that the Pope is campy? But it's bizarre, and it's only 10 episodes, so I can take a 10-episode weird trip.
I guess so. You know? That's a nice way to put it, because I'm not sure where it's going. I'm not sure. Like, okay, we've got this very vain, cigarette-smoking, ultra-conservative, 47-year-old, good-looking American Pope who's unpredictable. But what are they going to do with that? I don't know what they're doing with this story.
Yeah, I think it's not meant to be. I don't think it's meant to be highbrow. I think, and if it is, it's so highbrow that I have no clue what they're talking about.
Me neither.
I think it's just one of those things. It's just kind of an enjoyable, weird trip. It's a great cocktail party conversation, because I think most people will say, you don't get it either. Thank goodness. I don't get it either.
Right. Is there another show like this where they're taking big time movie stars and plugging them into even a short run TV series?
Yes. So I'm going to talk about something in February, just because I think that people need to mark this one down. But on February 19th, again on HBO, there's a series called Big Little Lies. And when I tell you who's starring in this, you're not going to believe me.
Okay.
Because it's Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, and Shailene Woodley.
Wow.
These are big movie stars. And it just shows that, you know, this project came to be because Nicole Kidman actually read the book, met with the author, and said, can I option your book? And she said, only if you star in it with Reese Witherspoon. And Nicole Kidman said, deal.
Wow.
These people, and David E. Kelly, I think, is directing it. I mean, these are big names who are being drawn to TV to do really interesting, limited numbers of episodes with beautiful stories that you can just, you know, you don't have the time constraints of a theatrical release, so you can just do something outstanding. And everyone in our office who's seen it just is gaga for this series.
Yeah.
You know.
Although there are some mainstream TV shows with TV stars, if you will, that
of
I think
course.
People are pretty excited about, too. When is Game of Thrones going to be back on my TV?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I don't even know. Game of Thrones is there are so many people who watch the show that it's honestly not on my radar. Because so many people read it and talk about it, like, and do it better than I do. But there is actually there's some things that are based on movies that I think are really interesting. There's a series, Training Day, that's coming out based on the movie Training Day.
Wow.
I think that's coming out in February that I think is really interesting. There's a series, another big movie star movie starting on February 1st is Madiba on BET. It's about Nelson Mandela, and Lawrence Fishburne is starring in this 3-part, 6-hour movie about Nelson Mandela. And it's, again, huge names. Orlando Jones is in it. And so, again, a movie star drawn to these almost passion projects, you know, on TV. We get to see all these great people.
Yeah, no kidding. I didn't realize. I thought there would only be two. I thought that part of our conversation was over after Big Little Lies. There's even more.
Sorry. There's so much good TV, though. I mean, really, John, we live in a time when every day there's something new and interesting on. Actually, on Monday, there's a really cool documentary. I don't know if you're a documentary fan, but again, HBO, which always kind of brings out cool stuff, has one about Warren Buffett called Becoming Warren Buffett. And obviously, you know, we all know what a financial genius he is, but to get to know the man is kind of a, you know, a neat thing to get to see where he, you know, what did it take to become Warren Buffett?
Yeah, no kidding. I don't know. This is on HBO, you said?
Yes, sir.
All right. By the way, the number is 312-981-7200. Haven't taken any calls yet, but I will if you want to jump in. An observation about a TV show or series that you're really enthusiastic about. Maybe you've got a question about. I will not put you in the position to be the answer grape for every TV show that's ever been recorded. But if somebody's got a question, so you do have the I'm not real sure option. But if you've got a show, a question, comment, or observation, like I was making a little list of shows that I'm intrigued by: Mr. Robot, Walking Dead, Stranger Things. I don't know if you have anything to say about any of those, but we'll pick it up.
I love Stranger Things. I mean, really. It's Netflix. One of the things they do is they just find really cool TV shows. And the thing that's nice about a streaming service like Netflix is once you find a show that you like that, they suggest more. So we at our house, after watching that, have fallen down a rabbit hole of finding really cool sci-fi streaming shows, which isn't a genre I usually get into. But since then, we watched Black Mirror, which is a BBC show, which was we were able to find all three seasons on Netflix. Then we watched The OA, which is a Netflix original. Now we're watching Sense8, which we were watching on Netflix, which is another sci-fi, like, crazy stuff going on show. You fall into these little rabbit
holes. Oh, I think we lost her. We did. Okay, that's fair enough. She's going to hang up. We're going to reconnect with her. We'll connect with you, too, in just a minute. John Williams here on WGN. And I guess I'm good to go here, right, guys? So let's pick it up with our guest. Let's go to Kelly Fries from Channel Guide Magazine and TVInsider.com. Kelly, lots of shows to talk about and some callers. Do you mind if we take some calls first?
That'd be great. That'd be great. Cool.
Okay, we'll start with Will. Will, go ahead, jump in here. Will, you're on WGN. Hi.
Let's talk about it. Some callers. Do you mind if we take some calls first?
Will's got us down. Let's put Will down and go back to let's try Dave. Will, pick up your phone, and Dave, you're up. Go ahead, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Thanks for putting me on.
Sure.
I was curious about the series Westworld. I enjoyed it immensely this season. I've never sat through 10 or 15 episodes of an HBO series before, and this is the first time ever, and I was really surprised and pleased with the quality. I understand from some people that I spoke to about it that they're going to take a different tack in the next season and actually get out of the wild, wild west and get into to an oriental motif. Any truth to that?
Wow.
Well, you know, they just confirmed in November that they're going to be bringing back this season. It was a big success for HBO, and I don't think they're going to bring it back till late 2017, early 2018, perhaps. I think the Man in Black is going to be coming back. You know, I'm not really sure what they're going to be doing. I feel like this is going to be a show that they're going to try to put a lot of things under wraps because it came out of the gate for them and was such a surprise success. I think they might, you know, try to keep a lot of the secrets under their vest. I have a feeling that I'll be hearing about it in August when I head out to LA for the Television Critics Association summer press tour. That's when all of the networks present their new stuff for the fall, and that's when we get our first peeks. It's usually when they reveal what the American Horror Story genre for the year is too.
Well, but I mean Dave's, but Dave's, you're somebody suggested you anyway that rather than a Western motif, this fantasy land where the robots interact with people would be kind of an Asian or Oriental setting.
Well, they said that part of the interest in the series was to change it so that you're not seeing the same players over and over again in the same surroundings.
Right.
And they alluded to the fact that at the last episode, they started to introduce these Asian characters, which was to be part and parcel of the next series of Westworld, you know, the land that they live in or the world that they've created for, you know, people's pleasure is going to change just to keep it fresh and keep it new. I thought that was a great idea. It was a great series. So I just
Think of how ambitious that is, how expensive that would be. I mean,
absolutely.
And what are they going to call it? Eastworld then?
I don't know.
That's interesting.
Well, thanks, John, for letting me on, and thanks for the information.
Yeah, likewise. Let's go to Will. Will, thanks for joining us back. You're on WGN.
Hi, John. How are you today?
Good, good, good. We're talking TV. What are you interested in?
Got a question about the House of Cards. When is the next season due to air?
I love House of Cards. I can't wait for the next season. It's going to be premiering May 30th, so I know around here we always joke that on whenever House of Cards is released, everyone suddenly gets sick on that Friday because we sit in front of our TVs and binge it all day long.
I hear you. Okay.
That's a brilliant series. I just really love it, and I hope you're as excited as I am for May 30th.
I'll be waiting.
Thank you, sir. One more quick call here. Let's go to Don. Don, thanks for calling. You're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to ask your guest what she thinks about, well, actually two shows, both on HBO. One is Divorce, and then I think it follows it right after. It's called Insecure. Finally, a show about black people by black people. And I'm going to hang up and listen to
your
answer.
I love that show. That's
good.
Insecure. I don't mean to interrupt, but Insecure is totally on my list of shows to watch because after the actress, I think it's her name, Lissa Ray, She was nominated for a Golden Globe, and she is like one of the new buzzy actresses. So I think that show looks incredibly cool. And Divorced, we interviewed Sarah Jessica Parker about that show, and I think it's a show that is, you know, it's a completely different show for Sarah Jessica Parker, but it's kind of funny, kind of dark, kind of. It's really interesting. It's just one of those shows that we really enjoy around here. And, you know, Sarah Jessica Parker was a great interview for us to have. She is always fun to talk to.
Yeah, no kidding. Before I let you go, any last show that's on your radar that you want to sort of tip your hat to for us here, Kelly?
Well, you know, I'm really interested to see 24 Legacy, which is on Fox. It's premiering after the Super Bowl. It's Corey Hawkins is starring. You know, it used to be is the story of Jack Bauer, and every day there was 24 hours in each, you know, it was divided up, and it was kind of a real-time counterterrorism type show. But Corey Hawkins starred in Straight Outta Compton. You might also know him from The Walking Dead. And he's kind of playing this, you know, counterterrorism expert. And I'm just interested to see how they're going to do it without Kiefer Sutherland in the lead role. And this time, instead of being 24 episodes, it's only 12. So how are they going to divide up the day and still make it feel, you know, pressing.
Yeah, where's the sense of urgency? Although, I to be honest with you, I remember that show first came out, and people were just nuts about that. They loved Jack Bauer. They loved the toughness. They loved how Kiefer portrayed it. They loved the sense of the clock and the time ticking down. I could never get on the bus because I thought, you know, they'll get a phone call. Oh, my God, so the nuclear bomb's going to go off. Quick, we've got to get across town. And then, like, 2 minutes later, they're there fixing the situation, and I'm thinking, no, you're in traffic now.
Well, you know, I think what's interesting is that show came out shortly after 9/11, and I think a lot of people were still frightened, and it was reassuring to hope that there were people out there who were running at the speed of light to stop potential tragedy. Yeah. And, you know, we were willing to put up with a lot of completely outrageous things. You know, there was a lot of stuff that you're like, that would never happen in real life.
I know. I need to resist that sort of analytical part of me that says, wait, this can't happen. That's not how real life works.
It's hard to turn off sometimes.
It is. It is. Hey, we'll turn you back on again sometime soon, Kelly. Kelly Freese from Channel Guide Magazine and TVInsider.com. Thanks for your time this afternoon, and we'll check in with you again.
Great. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
It's almost 2:30 now. Actually, it's a little bit past that, so let's jump into the newsroom in a minute. After that, we'll talk about sports with the boys from The Beat, and our Vibe Score segment returns. We'll sort of chart pop culture and other stories in the news and see how you're scoring it, all coming up on WGN.
And every time I let you leave, I always saw you coming back to me. When and where did we go cold? I thought I had you on hold.
Thank you, Bob Kessler. This is John Williams, and we're in our Vibe Score segment now. About 2:30 on Saturdays, we take a look and listen to things in pop culture and in the news. With Vibe Score, it's an app that you can get for free. My cousin and I developed it. We will send you stories that are of interest to you. We ask you a scorable question at the end of the videos or stories, and then you give us your vibe, 1 to 100. So, Griff, where are we going now? What was the music you started us with there?
That was the XX Depressing Brit Band that are back with their third album, I See You.
Wait a minute. What? I don't understand what those words were.
So the band is called the XX.
That's what I mean. Okay, XX is the XX is a band? No, that's a size on a T-shirt.
The XX.
Okay, fine. Keep going. And then Depressing Brits is what?
That's what they are.
Oh.
They're depressing. And they're okay. British.
I know what British means. Okay. Okay, so that was XX. And they are Depressing Brits. And then what was the name of the album? I didn't know which was. I thought maybe they were very large guys from England.
That's my bad. That was a little confusing. Their album, they have a new album.
Yeah.
It's called ICU.
ICU. And not as intensive care unit, but
No.
S-E-E-Y-O-U. Okay. Whew. Okay, that's a lot to process for my 50-year-old brain. Here.
I still think you don't know what is going on, but we can trudge forward. So that was the new song, the lead single from their new album, and it's called On Hold.
Yeah. I did like that sound that was on the radio a minute ago. I just didn't know who, what, or where that was. I thought that actually sounded pretty good. But you know what? To me, they were depressing Brits. I was a little, they're the kind of downbeat there, aren't they?
And that's probably their most upbeat song. That's worth noting. truly, truly. But I really like this new album. I'm a big fan of them. And yeah, I love that song. I'd give it a 90. They're kind of an interesting case because there's a guy from the band, his stage name is Jamie XX, and the band is called The XX. But he's probably the most famous because he's a solo producer, and he made a solo album last year that had a few big crossover hits that you probably even heard on the radio. But he's the only one in the band that doesn't sing. So the one that's actually kind of famous is the one that's not doing any singing. But
oh, that's funny. Yeah, normally it's the other way around.
So you liked it, though? You give it
Yeah, I did. So on my scale of 1 to 100, I'm going to give it, just because I'm confused with all the other elements, the name of the band, stuff like that.
Just all about the song. What did you think?
89, final answer.
Great.
Okay, where do we go next?
We go to TV. Mary Tyler Moore passed away. It kind of got buried in the insane Newsweek we had, but at the age of 80, and obviously the star of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Dick Van Dyke Show, we posted the scene of Chuckles the Clown's funeral from the Mary Tyler Moore Show and asked people to score it.
Yeah. Well, that's fun to go back and watch. Had you seen that before, or were you watching that for the first time?
I think I had seen it before, but it had been a really, really long time, so that was really fun.
It's delightful, and she's really good. It wasn't them just giggling at the funeral. It was really convincing, and they were really trying to hold back because it was such an absurd scene. The eulogy delivered straight on was hilarious, and the whole scene has a nice twist at the end. I mean, And by the way, so then I go back and I watch a lot of Mary Tyler Moore videos this week. And she was just such a lovely lady. She was so pretty. And her fashions, especially in the Mary Tyler Moore Show, made the 70s look great. And I don't remember them that way. What a, you know, what a gift her talent was to us over 40-some years. That was a lot of fun.
And you in Minneapolis, especially, she's kind of a local legend, even though her ties are thin to the city, but there's that statue. And I actually saw people posting a clip of her throwing out the first pitch at a Twins game some years ago.
Oh,
that was
kidding.
Really fun to see, yeah, at the Metrodome.
Well, you know, I live in Minneapolis and do a radio show there as well as here, but the day she died, we immediately ran over to the Mary Tyler Moore statue, the freeze frame of the final scene and the show open. And we did our ceremonial toss, and you can see that on my Facebook page. I'm King John on Facebook. A lot of people are doing that around the country now, and that's nice to see. A nice tribute to Mary Tyler Moore. Okay, so the Chuckles the Clown scene, having said all of that, I'm giving it a 92, Griffin. It really holds up. 92 for me.
It does, yeah. I'd go around there, too. And you can watch the Dick Van Dyke Show on Netflix, too, I've found. And I've watched a bunch of episodes of that recently, unrelated, before she passed. But that also holds up. It's incredibly funny.
It is. And it's also just, and it's true, everybody's been talking about this week, but you see through Mary Tyler Moore, you see as Laura Petrie and then as Mary Richards, the evolution of a woman on TV.
Oh, it's definitely true. Yeah. Some things you'll be taken aback at a little bit, like lessons that she has to learn as the mom are pretty backward thinking at times, but it's a product of the times, and she was always amazing in those shows. So.
Well, I mean, just the very fact, just to show you how far TV's come, Rob Petrie and Laura Petrie slept in different beds. They were in twin beds in the same bedroom. What is that? How did anybody think that was plausible or real? But that was the way it was back then. Very bizarre. Okay, where next, Griff?
In sports, we now have our Super Bowl coming up, next weekend, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
Falcons-Patriots. So who are you rooting for?
I don't care.
I don't care either.
I guess a neutral, because 100 would be the Patriots, and then you score the other direction. A 0 would be the Falcons. So.
Yeah, so you go 50.
Yeah, I think I'm a 50 on this one. Maybe 55, maybe 60. I like to see the very best teams do well. And what a machine the Patriots are. So maybe I'll pull for that.
No, I'd go the other way. Who wants to see the Patriots win more? Who cares? Like, enough with them already, even though they are the best.
You got a movie in our movie category. What are you asking people to score on?
Oh, yeah, Split is in theaters right now. It's the new movie from writer-director M. Night Shyamalan, who, of course, made The Sixth Sense and Signs and The Visit from a couple years ago. So we're asking people to score that. I haven't seen this one yet. I've heard a lot of different things.
Is it a thriller, kind of a scary, creepy, what
yes,
happened here kind
James,
of movie?
James McAvoy plays a guy with split personalities, and I think he's got a bunch of them.
Oh, God, I've seen the trailers for this 1,000 times.
Yeah, and what's your review based on the trailer? Go.
Oh, yeah, I don't need to see the movie. I'll tell you what, this movie is way overrated. it's an obvious ploy. We get it. What character is he going to be, the friendly one or the evil one? Whatever.
I think it looks pretty fun. He had a couple, you know, he obviously started his career with some great movies, The Sixth Sense being the most notable, but Signs and Unbreakable. I like all those movies a lot. And then it was a downward spiral starting with The Village that people didn't totally care for. And then there's movies like The Happening and The Lady in the Water. And then a bunch of ones you probably don't even remember. He had a real slump, but The Visit was pretty good a couple years ago. So I'm kind of, Nick DiGilio liked this one. I also got a text from somebody who said they walked out. So
really?
They didn't care for it.
Wow.
So I don't know. I don't know what to expect. I'm kind of intrigued, though.
On the viral category, we like to sometimes post for you. You can see and then score and talk about some of the things that are virally making the rounds each week. And we have a couple this week. What did you post?
There's a video. This is now a couple weeks old, but it's so good. It's just Chance the Rapper from Chicago dancing with three other guys. There's really nothing more to it, but you just have to watch it.
It's long. It's just a little thing.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. I love it. I don't think there's honestly not that much more to say, but they just dance.
And is that like to a hit? Is that the official video release with one of his songs?
No.
That's just him and some guys having a good time.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I come back to this too often, but there's so much anxiety and tension in the world that when you see something that's just fun and beautiful and artful and silly, oh, that feels good.
And I
this
think
Chance
he,
the Rapper video is that.
I think he posted it with those intentions, yeah. Yeah, but you seem to be concerned with how can he make money off of this. You're like, tie it in to the release of a song. Come on.
I'll tell you what, though. The video we've also posted there of Life Accordion to Trump. That's Life Accordion to Trump. You can see it in the viral category as well because this is making the rounds. Scott Stantis from the Tribune pointed this out to us. When Donald Trump gives a speech, he moves his hands back and forth like he's playing the accordion. People have put an accordion in his hands, and as he speaks, he plays the music, and it's pretty dang funny, I gotta say. So for those of you that want to check that out, it is there and ready for your scoring as well. Give me one more, Griff. What else should we mention
in here? Chicago sports, Rajon Rondo has a lot going on with the team right now. He posted a critical message for his team, the Bulls, obviously, on Instagram. Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler just recently said that they don't really have a problem with it, which I guess some people expected that they would, but they're supporting him. What do you think of that whole situation? Have you been following it?
A little bit. I'm more interested in what the heck Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade were doing in their last game where they just couldn't, you know, they've been benched, they're playing terrible, and I think the boys from the beat will have to give us their thoughts on this one in a couple of minutes.
Maybe that's the question. Just your vibe for the Bulls right now, because
things are
kind of all over the place.
What a great franchise that's just in such a weird place right now. And we also asked you in sports what you think of Tiger's comeback. He didn't make the cut. That never happens. But Tiger isn't even playing this weekend. But are you rooting for Tiger, or are you done with him? And I'm rooting for Tiger. I'm like 95. Come on, Tiger. Come on back.
I feel like we've been having the same, like, will he make a comeback conversation for, honestly, 10 years, truly. Like
longer than he had a career.
Yeah. I know it was great while it lasted, but I think it's been over.
Don't be a hater.
I've been listening to this conversation for too long. I won't contribute anymore. I'm out.
Vibe Score. It's an app that you can get for free. We'll feed you the news that you're interested in. Sometimes there's a video there. Each time we ask you a scorable question at the end, and we review the numbers and stories on Saturday. So what do the boys from the Beat have to say about some of that? We'll check in with them in a minute here on WGN. John Williams here. Mark Carmen, Harry Tynowitz getting ready to inform and entertain you. The boys from the Beat are in the studio. Hi, guys.
Good afternoon.
Hi, John.
So where are you starting, fellas? What's on your mind?
Well, hold on a second, because you were just talking about Tiger Woods, and let me just say that despite his forays off the golf course, I am with you, John. It's better for golf when Tiger is competitive. I completely agree.
Yeah, I mean, that much talent in one place, I have no interest in seeing that flame out any sooner than it has to. Let's. Wouldn't it be great if he made another, you know, second chapter in his career?
Oh yeah. I think we'd love to see the guy come back. And I think, you know, I'm a casual golf fan, and on Sunday, if I flip it on, you know, it's much more exciting to have Tiger there. He makes the perfect antagonist.
I'm not a golf fan at all. I'll watch if Tiger's in the mix.
Yeah, but wait a minute, Harry. So you're rooting. You want Tiger on TV to do badly?
I want him to compete, but then let somebody beat him.
So he's your Duke. He's your New York Yankees.
Yes. That sort of New thing. England Patriot.
Right. Yeah. By the way, how enthusiastic are you guys about the Super Bowl this year?
I'd say my enthusiasm is at a negative 17.
That's horrible. What country are you from?
Why do I have to be
Mark,
excited about
Mark, let's make the Super Bowl great again.
Why do I have to be excited about the Super Bowl?
We have the best Super Bowls.
Well, there's that.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Wouldn't you have been happier if it was the Packers? I mean, is it the fact that the Patriots are back that's bothering you?
I absolutely would have been more excited with the Packers in there. I would have loved to have seen Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady go toe-to-toe. And Atlanta's just Atlanta. Like, who cares about Atlanta and Matt Ryan? They do nothing for me. So it's, like, even hard to root for them, even though you're rooting for them because you want to see New England lose.
It's like I don't even know him, John. Matty Ice is exactly what America wants. They want a guy who has busted his butt, who does everything the right way, who puts team first, who has, you know, had an incredible season. He gets no attention.
Terrible sports city, playing a dome, irrelevant.
It's not his fault that he got drafted by the ATL.
It's not about faults. It's about reality.
Well, at least you've got this. Maybe you could have the Tiger Woods thing for Harry. That is, at least you've got Tom Brady to root against. So
exactly.
Pick any team and at least make it a good game, but then have the other team win it at the very end.
See, I think you just hit on something important there, John, is because I think deep down when we really psychoanalyze my mood on the Super Bowl, I just know that New England's going to win. So that's just...
Did you know they were going to win when they played the Giants twice and lost twice?
Apparently that just still resonates with me as fluke, and I don't think it'll happen again.
Luke,
what do you guys think of the status of the Chicago Bulls? What's going on over there? Oh, just speaking of head cases these days.
John, I think you should stay with us for the entire show and just direct what we talk about. This is so much easier. I think the Bulls are a national disaster, or at least a local one, and should be quarantined.
Last game where Wade and Jimmy Butler were playing so badly, were they doing that on purpose? Were they like ticked about something and said, "Fine, you want to treat me like this? Watch this. I'll put up an air ball." Was there something like that going on?
No. They're professionals. They're not going to do that. But I mean, it's more of a soap opera than it is a basketball team. And I mean, you had a situation in Wednesday night's game when you can see on TV, Coach Hoiberg calls for a timeout, and Butler says no.
Yeah.
And he takes it, and he drives down the court, and he banks it in. You know, I mean, I love Jimmy. You know, Jimmy loves playing basketball, but he's the coach, man. You got to listen to the coach. You know, unless you're LeBron. And
I was just going to say, LeBron pulls that off, at least with his last coach, not this one.
Right, David Blatt. But, there's something wrong with the Bulls, and a lot of people got to get involved. And Gar Forman yesterday spoke to the media for like 12 seconds and didn't take one question.
Is there any interest in getting rid of Jimmy Butler and starting all over?
I think there is. And talked to a couple people last night, went to the United Center to inspect this firsthand here, John. This type of talk show host reporter that I am.
Yeah.
Also didn't have anything to do, so you can factor that in there a little bit.
Yeah.
But there seems to be a little building sentiment that Jimmy is going to get traded in the offseason. Not necessarily by the deadline, which is February the 23rd, but perhaps by the time the Bulls come to training camp at the Advocate Center next September, you will have a different star on the team. I don't know. They have not shown a huge desire to do that. But I would like to mention that the Boston Celtics are a wholly, totally different basketball team with Jimmy Butler, and they have a ton of draft picks. Not like a couple draft picks. They have multiple high-round picks. So to me, that makes a lot of sense.
Wait a minute. Jimmy would go to Boston? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, Jimmy goes to Boston. Somebody's got to get over the top and beat Cleveland in the Eastern Conference. The Celtics have a pretty good roster. They got a ton of young they have a ton of draft picks to trade. I think that adds up.
Jimmy could be reunited with his Marquette buddy, Crowder.
There you go.
Hmm.
Good add-on.
I'm not in a hurry to trade Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler has come so far, and I think we're just kind of seeing, you know, the birth of what he could be in this league. He's, you know, he does everything. He's not just a scorer. He's not just a defender. He's a tremendous player. I'm not in a hurry to get Butler. I'm in a hurry to get Butler focused.
Yeah. Well, that was my next question. I don't have time for this, guys. I got to go, but I wonder if you had if you had to do one, keep the coach or keep the player, and who would you get rid of if you had to start all over again? I don't know the answer to that question. Do you?
Both and.
Get rid of them both if you could.
Immediately fire Fred Hoiberg and then just see what you can get for Jimmy. That'd be my plan, John.
That's Mark Carmen, Harry Tynowitz, too. Guys, you're off to a good start. We'll be listening. Thanks for saying hi to me today.
Thanks, John.
You're the best, John.
That's Harry and Mark, and I'm John, and we'll wrap this thing up in a minute on WGN.